Imagine having all, guess all, of your learning challenges solved. With Docebo's Learning Suite, an AI-powered LMS built for enterprise, you can tackle any challenge. You can easily create and manage content, deliver training, and measure the business impact of your programs. Docebo is built for customers, partners, and employees alike, with dozens of integrations to embed directly in the flow of work. Check out Docebo today at docebo.com. Welcome to C-Lab, the customer education laboratory, where we explore how to build customer education programs, experiment with new approaches, and exterminate the myths and bad advice that stop growth dead in its tracks. Glad to be here again. Took a little summer break, and I am Dave Darrington, and
I am Melissa Krumanis.
Hello, Melissa. This is great. I'm really excited to have you. But before we start, we always do our days of the year. I'm not going to show this on the screen. I'm going to read them out. So the days of the year for today. Oh, I love this. National Red Wine Day. And then we've got some contenders. So what I always do is I do a vote. Okay, National Red Wine Day. National Cherry Turnover Day. And then National Bowtie Day. I think I know what I'm picking. I like red wine.
I'm picking red wine for sure. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, that's always the fun part. Once again, we're here to, this is an important episode to us, and Melissa's here from Docebo. And what we want to do is talk today, like get to know you, get to know the platform again, and really get in your head about direction we're going and what you're seeing, and just connect with the audience. Because a really important part for me, Melissa, is and our audience, is to get to know the vendors and the people, because we're all human, right? We're all learning experts. And sometimes when you find yourself within a vendor company, you're still you. You still have this great experience behind you, and there's a reason they hired you here, right? So that's what I'd like to explore today. And also just have really a good natural discussion about where we're going, because I know you're going getting ready for the event, right? Yeah. There's lots of cool stuff coming out. So why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Let's start from that.
I would love to. So my name is Melissa Krumanis, and I am the Director of Customer Education at Docebo. Yay. And I've spent, goodness, probably the last 20 years in all forms of customer education, enablement, everything from tech writing and, curriculum development, all the way to partner enablement and sales enablement, and just that full spectrum of experience. But before I got into all of that fun stuff, I actually moved overseas after college, lived in France for a few years, and taught English in a boarding school. At which point I discovered I love just teaching and seeing the aha moments.
You found your inner teacher then, huh?
I am my inner teacher for sure. Maybe more inner trainer than teacher, but definitely my inner teacher came out.
Wow. So how long did you stay in France in that role?
So the first time I was there for a year, and then the second time I was there in 2004 and 2005.
Oh, wow. So that's interesting. And I bet that really seasoned your whole journey going forward, because now you're immersed in a different culture even, which is like, global is in your title. And that's important as products move out of I want to dominate the conversation, but I just want to tap on how important it is to see that globality, the international level of what we're doing at that end.
And it's interesting too, because there are nuances and differences. I actually now have, inherited or adopted the localization team for Docebo, because we see the need to ensure that content is localized, that people are getting that messaging and that it resonates with them. So I studied international business in undergrad, adult education and org leadership in my graduate studies. So it's near and dear to my heart to have a localized experience for learners.
That's really good. We need more of that. You should elaborate on that a little more, particularly about the nuances as we go through our discussion, because just connecting dots in customer ed, a lot of the times we start in a small place and then we grow so fast that edge of, oh, now we're teaching people in France, or now we're in China, or now we're in, all of a sudden that knocks your knees out and you're like, oh, I've got to think differently. Really cool.
Well, and Docebo was a, you know, we were an Italian-based company.
Yeah.
And so much of even just the culture of the organization is an international business culture. And so, you know, there's a lot of amazing things. I get to have all kinds of amazing food when I go to our different offices. That's the most important, of course. And the wine. It's not, you know,
and the wine. About
wine day, definitely the wine. But that also means, you know, we have offices in France. We have offices in Canada. And so even though they both speak French, localization of content is not translation of content. And so that's really fascinating to me.
Oh, localization of content is not translation of content. Thanks for clarifying that. I'm just underscoring it because, yeah, it's the not just the linguistic nuances, the cultural nuances, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you get invited to, like, where'd you make the connect to Docebo? How did that pop up?
That actually evolved. So long story very short, when I moved back to the US, I was hired by Fruit of the Loom corporate headquarters.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So kind of fun there because they had some software that they were implementing and they needed training. And so they put me through Six Sigma Black Belt training and just did a ton of process improvement for a plant in the French speaking part of Canada because I'd moved back from France and I spoke French.
Yeah.
And so worked in that space. Gosh, I was with Fruit of the Loom for 12 years. So I was a long timer, which is unheard of nowadays, right? To be with a company for 12 years. It was a great company. And ended up going to teach that same software. So I taught all around the world, 30 manufacturing distribution centers for fruit, but ended up going to the software company that owned that software. And led their training function toward the end, as well as was introduced to sales and services enablement. So being able to enable our sellers and our service individuals to understand the product, understand how to connect with customers who are having certain challenges. And then I went on to some startups, founded a university and a couple of global enablement functions. And long story, very, very short, one of my now dearest friends, I will give him a little shout out here, Matthew Bauman. I worked with him at my previous company, which was a Docebo customer. And when he started at Docebo, he said, we've got to get you here. You know, this is just your dream job.
Oh, wow. Now that is really good because what I find really important in this discussion too, is that you've come in from a company that was using software, but they're manufacturing. Right. In my background too, where I got my training wheels, I'd say, in enablement was I was working in a pharmaceutical plant with really complicated. I mean, the software they use sometimes is complicated. And you go, well, how do we train on this? And that's where many of us kind of emerge from.
Yep.
That it's not software as a service, which I think, and I'm saying this for a reason, I'm not going to try to say too long, but I think we've kind of pigeonholed customer ed as a software thing when it's not. And customer ed had its origin stories way back in manufacturing era. And it was a pharmaceutical healthcare company that was saying, look, we need to educate our customers. And they found they had so much more business when they talked not just about the product, but it was about learning in general. And I mean, we're not doing different things. We're niching up out of software and teaching the whole world, but now around business of learning, around moving really fast and using new things, right, to help our customers get excited and our internal and our enablement and our salespeople and everybody. It's all part of one fabric. Sorry, I got excited there.
I'm always excited. And even though I was in manufacturing, you know, I've now been at 4 tech companies.
Yeah.
And I will say it's very different, right? Like there are cultural differences there, but there's also so many similarities. I love the pharmaceutical, you know, example that you would use there. I also think that in the software space, my previous company was a fintech. And yeah, it was really great to see how we partnered with financial institutions to be able to upskill them, a lot of it around compliance and risk that they may not have even realized was there.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of stuff. And now you're seeing the emergence of things in fintech that are encroaching upon Bitcoin. And now you have a really complex software, but now normal people are, I'd say normal, but everybody's trying to get into things like that. So learning is at the depth of all of these different things. I like what you said in our notes about, I think you're tapping on education comes in all shapes and forms,
yeah,
right? And maybe what we can start to edge into is I don't think we talk enough about the whole substrate of learning. Okay. That what you're entering into the conversation with is really important, because in my field, we've gotten so far in customer ed, but I haven't just been a customer ed all my life. I've been an enablement person. I've done all these things. I've built, you know, training programs just like you have in different fields, but I wasn't here where I am today. And now you said some things about, hey, database insights and making right tools in places, or all these things are universal to us and we need to share them more. So tell me a little bit more about your global enablement, and maybe we pin that in first, and then we kind of like expand out of that and talk about what you're doing now and how now you've got a purview of a lot more things, right?
Yeah. So when I first moved into global enablement, I really started with sales enablement, partner mm-hmm. enablement, curriculum. Eventually, I always say adopted, inherited technical writing, which was, it's just another modality of learning. It really is. You know, it's written documentation learning versus an e-learning or a live instructor learning. And so for me, that exposure taught me so much. A little bit of trial by fire and getting in there and figuring it out. But it also taught me about this huge spectrum that exists. And so from an education perspective, to your point, right, it's been around 30, 40 years. We often are thinking of education from the mindset of curriculum development, right? Like that's the first thing. When people hear ed, they're like, oh, okay, we have classes now. And maybe you do. And maybe you're monetizing your offerings and you're having paid ILTs or subscription e-learning programs. There's so many different ways to do that. But when I think about enablement, it's beyond the courses, it's beyond the resources, and it's about the bridge, and customer education is a big part of that bridge. It lays a mm-hmm. lot of the bricks mm-hmm. Between the promise, right? Like the value that we sold to a customer. We said, hey, we're going to help you solve this problem. The platform is the bridge, which is really just how do you get from the problem to the value or the business impact that they're wanting to see. Ideally right. in a quantifiable way.
Ideally. That's hard.
Ideally in a quantifiable way. And so I think education and to a larger extent, enablement are all part of that, because it's not just education. We can teach the best things in the world to our customers, but if they don't have C-level support, if they don't have people who are motivated to learn and want to learn, especially adult learners, right? Like what's in it for me? The WIFM, they've got to have that. If we don't have the processes and tools in place internally to support continuing the education and the conversation, have our CSMs mm-hmm. been enabled to then support the streamlined messaging that we have? So a lot of times I tend to refer to this, and I may have mentioned it before. I know we talked before I mentioned, I often call this value-led product uh-huh. supported education. Meaning we're yeah. leading with the value and the outcomes that we want them to see. Our product happens to be the way that we help them get there.
I like how you say that, that we're leading with value, right? It's not just a curriculum. It's not just what I've seen when I got thrown into the deep end myself more, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, is that that really is the urge, and leadership will go, oh no, hire an education person, buy an LMS, build classes. Yeah. And that's it. Right. It's not this, pardon me. I think if I could do anything and I could sit down with many C-suite professionals and talk about the whole topology of learning and enablement, and from sales partners, customers, prospects, whatever, you have this learning is everywhere, pervades every pore of a business. And yet we kind of deprecate it. We're kind of go, we can't really measure it very easily. So it's an investment and we're just going to go. And then that makes me feel like I'm less important. You know what I'm talking about as a professional?
It does. And it's really interesting. And again, not to be a walking banner for Docebo, but I will say,
go for it.
It's been one of the most amazing journeys in my career to work for a company that is just as passionate about learning and customer success through learning as I am. You know, I've been in a lot of orgs, and not knocking those orgs, you know, obviously they invested in having me there and having the role for customer education and enablement. But at the same time, nobody wants to go take a class. You know, I'm in my mid 40s. I don't want to go sit in front of a computer for hours and hours and hours, unless it is engaging and intriguing and immediately applicable to the job that I need to do. And so, again, just culturally for me, Docebo has been really refreshing and rewarding to have that experience.
That's amazing. And I think we resonate, we connect on that. It's value. It's, I want to get something out of it. I just don't want to go take a course. And that's the most interesting thing, Melissa, right now that I'm seeing by working more deeply and broadly in the field is that there's this pivot that I see leaders and I see people go, we can get, and a light bulb comes on sometimes, particularly in companies where I start talking with, you know, VP level people who are just starting out. And once the light goes on where they say, oh, this isn't just about a course. No, it's, what are you trying to do? What's the problem? What are the skills that people don't have? And they're not just one person. One, it's not just an employee. It's not just a customer. It's those people at different points of times, in different places, in different headspaces. And they might be in different modalities, like a community. They might be micro learning. They might be your LMS. And the LMS is like the key and one of the cornerstones that helps us drive that. So I'm super excited you found your way into such a supportive organization that, yeah. And I know that the event's coming up, I'm gonna be there. I want to learn more. I want to see more. I'm going to be all over the place learning. Let's see what are we going to take this next? What's on your mind next about this kind of an organic discussion, the important stuff you're working on, or you lead me.
Yeah, I would love to go into that. I actually want to dig a little bit deeper in something you mentioned.
Yeah. Okay. Go for it.
And you mentioned about it so much more than a course. And you also mentioned our Inspire events coming up, right?
Yeah.
And so I am speaking at Inspire on the very topic of how do you, number one, become a performance partner, not a content creator. Content creation is part of the performance partnership, but right. My philosophy is that customer education enablement holistically is about performance and gap analysis. What are the performance gaps? Not just what do they need to learn? Because the reality is without doing that and understanding that, you can't teach the right things. And so I always joke, enablement and understanding the processes and understanding what needs to happen to connect the bridge, that's just a fancy way of saying needs analysis. And that, you know, that's the word and phrase that we use that's token for us. It is something I'm super passionate about. I can't go into the content because, you know, the marketing team would kill me.
Yeah. But no, don't give it away.
If you are going to be an Inspire, would love to have you join us for that session because it's full of Star Wars references and Charlie Brown jokes.
So. Oh my God. Okay. That'll be fun. But yeah. I like how you say that it's performance or even the pivot the splash of color I'd add to that was it's also about getting to an outcome in the language of the CS world. So performance may be an indication for an enablement team. Like, were you able to perform? And for a customer, it's still the same thing, but it's more like, did you get to that outcome, which is their performance, but it's extrinsic to me. Now it's an enablement problem on the inside. And that's one thing I don't think we look at. It's for every thing where I'm doing in customer ed, the enablement part of it is the receiver, right? And we have like kind of a disconnect sometimes because we don't think of it that way. And I'm pushing content to you from another company. Whereas when we're building enablement programs, we're doing that from the inside. Right. And we don't have that external buffer or whatever that we're working on. So it's all related. That's what we're saying. Right.
Well, and I think sometimes the consumers of learning, they may not see it if we don't explicitly call it out. And it's something that I still see to this day, when I'll pick on my team because I love it for them. I have an amazing team. But when I first started, a lot of our learning objectives in our e-learning were, we're going to show you this and we're going to show you that. And I really challenged that. I'm like, it's not about us. It's about what the learner achieves. So instead of writing a learning objective of we're going to show you X, the learning objective should be you're going to be able to do Y. Right. And when we can start, it's all about communication. When we can communicate in that way, we're communicating the value to the learner. And that's automatically going to get them more invested.
You see that? Is that just a rookie move? And why I ask you that is when I go to work with organizations that are building educational enablement material for the first time, I see this approach to, okay, I'll go make a course. Hi, I'm Dave, and I'm going to teach you all these really great things about such and such, and I'm really glad you're here, and blah, 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 blah. 3 minutes go by, and now I have my bio and all that stuff, and now I'm like, okay, all right, now I got to the content, and it's that communicative, like, I want to get to the meat. I don't care. I like you. That's fine, but I don't have time for that. I've got to do something, right? If I was at work and I need to know you, that's a wholly different thing. Do you see that? Like, as a problem for native, like new content developers?
I don't know if it's so much new content developers. I tend to notice it more in people who come from a teaching and or academia background.
Okay.
Because when you are in that environment, right, especially when you're teaching child learners, very different from adult learners, it is about, here are the things I'm going to tell you. And what, you, how many of us have been told, tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them what you told them. And that's where I think the trap happens. And when we think about adult learners, we know, right, all the way back to adult learning theory, they're there because of their motivations, their lived experiences, and what they're going to get out of it.
Right.
And so you have to frame it differently. So anyway, that's been my sort of very unsophisticated and unresearched observation is that it tends to happen when we think about teaching versus learning.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And that's something we can't say enough. It's that we all think we know how to teach. We've all been classes forever. We've seen it. We've done it. And we carry that forward. But now what you and I and our peers are doing is not that. And we have new and I wanted you to talk about that more, because what I see in this industry is, as we move faster, and when I say industry, that's broad, education for businesses, enablement, all that kind of stuff. We're moving so fast. And in the job market today, we've seen like a big wash, like a lot of people are out. And now other kinds of teams, like for example, a digital customer success program may be now starting to generate that content themselves and not have an instructional designer or a learning professional to do it. So they fall into that trap really easy. And that's one of the things that I hope to like dispel, to say there's things you need to know about what we've learned formally. And yet they twist, they're a little different and we don't do them the same way. But you need that stuff there to be able to be, to get the customer what they want fast, to get the employee what they want fast and not screw around.
It's funny. This reminds me of our previous conversations we had around knowledge management. Because,
yeah, let's get on that.
You know, if I dig into that a little bit, I almost see those as two ends of a spectrum. So there is the formalized curriculum that starts with a needs analysis of what we need and then evolves into, okay, now that we understand what we need, what do we need to teach in order to achieve those outcomes? Or what do we need to do in order to achieve those outcomes? Whereas knowledge management, on the flip side, really is more about capturing information when it becomes available for a future need that you don't even know that it exists yet a lot of times. It's just capturing that institutional knowledge. And I think that's probably what happens a lot when you have subject matter experts generating content, which, by the way, I'm in full support of subject matter expert generated content.
Yes.
But that's when we have to understand, do we need a course or do we need a resource? And if we're just transferring knowledge, I'll take a resource all day long. But if I'm building skills and I'm changing behavior, if it is change management, I'm more likely to lean into a course with a formal needs analysis and that more formalized process.
Yeah. Well, yeah, change management has that need for formality. Yeah. But a lot of the time that first flush of trying to get to, well, what does somebody need, is biased by, well, I've stepped into companies and they go, oh, well, the knowledge management is hard because it's all in one person's head and you can't get them to sit down. And once you start to unlock and you lock a SMEs, the subject matter expert's mind, and you get them to understand and grok, if I got hit by a truck, this company would be in dire straits.
And, I would say if they won the lottery. This is how I'm building a culture of documentation on my team. I'm like, hey,
won the lottery.
When you win the lottery, we need to know how this process works and what's going on. And it's funny. I have one of my teammates that she's always like, thank you for not trying to kill me. Thank you for saying I'm going to win the lottery.
Maybe I'm more morbid. I don't know. I like that. The lottery. Yeah. It's like, I'm out. Bye. But that, okay. Let's jump around a little bit. We have a long trip with a lot of points. One of the things that I'd really like to dive into first is kind of related around knowledge management and this emergence of different things we're doing. And what you're talking about is really critical. So if I were to say I'm a newer company, right? It doesn't matter where you are in your journey, but you don't have a lot of stuff. Maybe you don't have a really good enablement program. Maybe you don't even have sales enablement. Maybe you don't have customer enablement. You don't have all of these things. And in your script or in your notes, you got into some 3 points that I really appreciate that resonate, right? I want to prompt you up so I don't, I think we're looking at the same script. So starting with business building for scale,
yep.
Can you tell me about, I'd like to get you to talk about what your approach is. Start with that. Where are you starting at? What are you advising people to do? How do we build the trappings of a program that are amazing, working with knowledge and giving people those outcomes, like you're saying?
Yeah. I think there's 3 things, right? There's building for scale. There's the knowledge management piece. And then I always jokingly say reduce, reuse, recycle. And so, when I think about building for scale, a lot of times that's infrastructure, but it's also building this culture of documentation, which is the knowledge management piece of, okay, I have solved this problem once and I'm going to take the 2 to 3 minutes that it would take me to document how that problem was solved so that it can be used in the future. And the easiest way to get people to buy into this is to show them the impact. So I'll give you a prime example without giving away too much from a numbers perspective. Based on support tickets that my team saw in second quarter, so just this past quarter, we were able to divert $1.7 million in support cost because we had that information available that had been captured.
Yeah.
And when you're attaching knowledge-based articles to support tickets, when you are, having CSMs who are educating through e-learning instead of through having to individually tell every single customer how something is managed, or when you have in-app guidance that prevents the tickets and the calls from ever happening in the first place, those are the things that to me are part of building for scale. And then in terms of reduce, reuse, recycle, I think it's about building modular content that can be used in different modalities or publishing. And there's amazing tools for this today. There are single source publishing tools. There's topic-based authoring philosophies where you can have that same, I call it a nugget, right? Like same nugget of wisdom can be in a KB article. It can be pushed, you could even iframe into a Rise course if you wanted to, right? If you wanted to do something there, you could have it pushed to in-app guidance, push information into your Git repository, pull down. There's so much from a technology perspective that is there to help with that.
I really like this. I like how you structure that. You're building for scale, you're capturing institutional knowledge and leveraging it, and then you're reduce, reuse, recycle. I think that's really appropriate. In the notes, as I was reading through all of this and I was thinking and reflecting upon approaches that we've all taken, some new things are happening. One company I had the opportunity to talk to more recently is called MoveWorks, and they got this concept of agentic AI. And I'm like, what's that? So I did some research, and what this falls into everything you're talking about, because now we're seeing this thrust of a knowledge organization or a structure where we can input all these things. And now an AI can help us again, I'm caveating this because it's never perfect. But if we are doing a structured way of saving what we know and sharing that with each other, and not holding back because, I want to tell you, Melissa, my secret, I'm gonna lose my job. Well, that feeling is there. But the fact that I can easily go, you know what, I'm a CSM and I need to organize some more information. I've got it in this format. I can do a ChatGPT prompt and get something appropriate out that actually structures it and it's accurate, right? And then that's a really good step, but that could become a document and that can be reused over and over again. Or the other thing I like to say is, once I've gotten everything into play, let's go back to build for scale. All right, I build a course the first time. It might take me a little longer, but I'm not going to build it for one-off. And I'm also not going to work for perfect. I'm working to get it done, move on, come back, add a piece, move on, add another piece, move on, split them up, 2 courses can merge and move on. And that I think we sometimes, and me included, get stuck on, I'm building this awesome monolithic certification or something perfect. And I don't allow myself the freedom and flexibility to say, I'm going to reuse that. I'm going to work towards ratcheting up to something that's good over time. It doesn't have to be perfect.
It reminds me of my pizza analogy that I think I shared with you.
Pizza.
Which is, I had an amazing mentor. I still talk to her regularly. So a leader at one of my previous companies. And when I first joined the company, one of the first things she said to me, you know, it was a startup, it's fast paced, they're getting everything out the door as quickly as possible. And she said, we would love 5-star dining. Like if we had all the time, resources, and money in the world, we would have amazing certification programs for everything. I don't necessarily agree with that part anyway. But our customers are hungry. And right now they're starving, and a slice of pizza is going to feed them. And so for me, that is one of the biggest challenges, is finding that balance between the analysis paralysis dilemma, right? Finding the balance between good and the urgency, right? Like what is good enough to meet the need, and not making everything 5-star dining. And that's hard. Yeah. That's hard for those of us with type A, you know, recovering type A personalities. That is hard.
Well, let's lean into that more, because this creativity aspect, and that, okay, I like to consider myself as a creative professional. And for me, the way my mind works is not a, well, this is not always neurotypical, and I'm thinking about this, and I'm like this, and this connects to that. And then, you know, I could get so, I guess as a creative, I can pull all that stuff together pretty quickly. But the hard part is like, okay, well, how do I make this conform or comply with what the tools I've got are? And then I start to spend so much extra time with the tool rather than with the content. And I try to make all this stuff make look perfect. And then maybe I have a manager that's nitpicky and we're worrying about words. And then now, you know, we're 2 or 3 months in where the customer needed that slice of pizza.
That's you talked hard. To my team about the nitpicky, didn't you? No, I'm just kidding.
No, but I think if we as learning professionals aren't addressing that, and I've had this all the time. I remember a couple of experiences, and I'll very generalize them. With people who either came, like you said, from an academic background, and sometimes not, but they're a hardcore recovering perfectionist. And it's, you know, you're throwing the kitchen sink and you're doing your best work, and you do, but you work in an environment where we've got to get something done today. A customer is in pain. And I think as an educator, that's not like, I came from teaching too. I spent years at a university teaching all kinds of stuff, databases and game design, believe it or not. But what I learned from that, there's different ways to approach it. I mean, you can't be perfect on everything. It's the interaction and the communications with the student and getting them to unlock things and think about stuff. And if there's a typo, really, I don't care. I'm having a relationship with somebody and we're learning together.
Well, and I think it's about giving the customer the space to provide feedback, right? Is it something that, first of all, everyone needs a maintenance strategy. If you're building for scale, you have to have a maintenance strategy. And it's sometimes, again, it's kind of like documentation. It gets put off to the side as that's tomorrow's problem. And so for me, it's really around balancing what helps me get the job done. And modality matters too, right? If I see a bunch of typos in an e-learning, I'm pretty much shut off. I'm like, oh, well, they didn't put a lot of effort into this. Regardless of how much effort was put in.
That's a fair point.
You know, you do tend to think that way. If I'm in a live instructor-led training and there's something that you have that live person there to sort of glaze over and be like, oh, you know, hey, this is how we want to address this challenge. I think it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. It's giving yourself grace is what I like to say. It's let's get it out there. It looks good enough. Great. If somebody I always talk about Walt Disney and the concept of a weenie. You know, weenie was a mistake that was intentionally left in place to distract people from some other inferior things that aren't quite right that you know about. And not to say that I would do that intentionally, but sometimes like, leave it. Let's go get it published. What is the get it published? Move on to the next thing. You can come back. We can fix that in line. And that's such an important thing as an educational person to bridge that. The need to get customers to value and outcomes and to help them when they're struggling because they're coming to you, and then they can stop coming to you because you don't do that. This is for me, like my only pitch here and all of this is that, well, no, the biggest reasons I think that we see CS metrics failing, like You get too much churn. You have too much support tickets. You have too much is because we forget that we have to scale what we know. And that's where we come in with our platforms and our tools and our mindset to say, gotcha. Okay. This. What's the biggest need? Let's talk to some customers. Let's put all this stuff together. But if we're really doing like this three-step approach that you've indicated, I think this is solid, right? This is what I do. It's really easy to bring it down to this. You're building for scale, you're capturing knowledge, you're leveraging it and you're reusing it, and you're giving yourself grace to build along that journey parallel to what your customers and your team are experiencing, right? Take a breath.
Yeah, I'll take a breath for a moment. I think it's such a critical thing for people to balance. And I think what makes it even harder, I'm just going to throw this out as a challenge that a lot of teams face, is there's a million stakeholders for the customer education team.
Yeah.
CS is a stakeholder. You know, you got your customer success team that wants, we want to make sure customers have this. You've got your professional services doing your implementation and that piece. And depending on the scope of your education and enablement team, you might be creating, content for marketing or going out and enabling for us in particular, we are customer education. We're educating customers on our platform, but it's kind of meta, right? Like our platform is also the platform that is what we do. So we are the learning professionals. I often joke that we are our first internal customer. Yeah. Because we're the ICP, we're the perfect, case to study things. So that also means, though, that we're getting asked for our opinions to share on marketing collateral or for the sales teams or, hey, has anybody ever worked with this platform before? I've worked with 10 different learning platforms. So being pulled in all those directions, there are skills and knowledge, but skills that have to be developed by customer education professionals. Number one, how do you say no?
Oh my.
How do you speak the language of the person you're talking to? That is, and again, that goes a little bit back to my Inspire conversation. But there's really three levels. I mean, I won't go into Kirkpatrick and all the levels. I want to talk about like communication levels. Are you communicating to an individual person about how this helps them? Are you communicating with a team manager and how this helps their team be more effective? Or are you communicating with a C-suite leader who really, not that they don't care about the other two things, but those are secondary. How's it going to help the bottom line of the business? And I find that most customer education professionals I've worked with in the past are not proficient at each of those three buckets.
Unfortunately, but that's why this role is evolving. And what we're all trying to do collaboratively is get to the point where we know that we can know these skills and we can develop them. And you're right, that if we don't have all of those in some capacity, we need to be reaching out to get help from others. If you can't talk to a C-suite leader, I'll give you an example on, we won't have time for all the stuff that we want to talk about, so we'll have to have a part two. But you didn't talk about certification. I've had times where a C-suite leader comes to me and says, Dave, we're building a certification program and you're building it. Okay, well, I don't think that's highly advisable because blah, 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 blah. I don't care. Let's do it anyway. Yeah. And
in there.
Yeah. And then it's like, okay, well, let me level set something. I will disagree. I will disagree and commit.
Yeah.
Right. I agree. You know, it's fine. I do think there's value in this, but here's the things that as me, because I've reached out and I've spent a lot of time with people that know certification really well, including vendors that do it, and learned a lot. It's not going to have a return on investment on cash unless we do these things. It's going to take a lot of time, and you want it done 6 months, it's going to take 18. And to do it the way you want it. Now, if we want to caveat that with, what are you really trying to do? I can do that with all these different other things. But that conversation, Melissa, it's so intimidating. Yeah. Particularly for someone who may be a manager or maybe a director level still, that to have that conversation with a professional and say, no, you will do this, and to say no to them, that's scary. I think that's a problem that we commonly do, and we end up being order takers sometimes because of it.
And that's one of my biggest, I won't say pet peeves, but biggest things that I always warn, particularly new people to the industry, is when you go to a fine dining restaurant, you don't go and tell a chef what you want them to cook. I know I'm going back to all the food and the wine analogies, but let's roll with it. You know, you go in and you see what's on the menu, and they might say like, hey, what are you in the mood for tonight? Are you in the mood for, you know, steak or beef or chicken or whatever? And then they're going to go cook you this amazing dish that is so much better than anything I could have possibly ordered for myself. And yeah. I think that's, to your point, it's really intimidating. It's a hard conversation to have, but we have to get comfortable with that discomfort if we want to be able to prove the business impact that we know that we can have.
Yes. That's really well put, Alyssa. It's important. And if you're listening out there and you're one of those people like I have been in the past that struggle with that, you know, just reach out, because we can support you. There's friends out there that have done this, and it's like coaching. Okay. I think we have time for one last subject. We've got about 10-ish minutes. I would like to go back to Docebo as a platform and talk to you a little bit more. And this is up to you. Like, we're here conveying, hey, you have joined the team and you're an amazing fit for all of this. Tell me more about what you're looking forward to. What are a couple of goals you have? I know this event coming up. Maybe there's something in the product and platform that you're just got to talk about. So let's go down that road a little bit.
Sure. So I think there's things both from a Docebo as a company perspective that we're doing that are super exciting. And then I think there's some things on the customer education team. So I'll divide those two.
Okay, good.
Yeah. On Docebo side, gosh, there's so much amazing. We've had tons of GTM activity the second half of this year. So I can't wait for everyone to see what's coming. But one of the most recent two actually that are related to the conversations we've been having. So one is our communities pack, which really brings that collaborative learning from a second, you know, space or platform or tool into Docebo, into right. the learning platform. And so we have the opportunity to extend a learning experience with, I think the word social learning is so That's often popular. Used. Yeah. It's almost a little overused in my opinion, but we'll say collaborative learning. We also have the ability to then have subject matter experts that we've identified or your organization has identified to provide feedback and guidance. And so I think the most common use case for me in this is sales enablement, where, you know, you've got this institutional knowledge and how much better to be able to be more effective at your job very quickly than to leverage the institutional knowledge that you know works. It works with your ICP, yeah. It works with your sellers, it works with the sales methodology that you're using. So communities for me is one that's super exciting. I would also say we've got some fun stuff coming out in e-commerce that I will not overshare, but we're going to be leveraging also on the customer ed team, which is super exciting. And then, of course, our Inspire events that are coming up. So we have one in Dallas I'll be at. I think you said you're going to be there too. So
I'll be there too. I'm excited. Yeah.
And we've got one in Rome. And then I'm not allowed to tell just yet, but we have one coming next year as well. And so as soon as that location is confirmed and that information is ready to be shared, we'll celebrate that one too.
Well, that's amazing. Okay. So there's a lot going on. Yeah. I'm really excited about going to Inspire this year. I went last year. And for me, if you're in customer ed and haven't seen this kind of event, it's not just about your platform. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And a lot of really cool people like, for example, Saul Khan, Josh Burson, Strip's name, and a lot more people. When I just showed up to a whole bunch of events, I'm like, I learned a lot. And there's room for, like, you do talk about customer ed and L&D and enablement and all the things, right? Like you're spread out for lots of topics.
We have so the event is 3 days. The one in Dallas that's coming up is a 3-day event. And so the entire first day is what we call DU, Docebo University, Inspire. And so that really is more of the, value-led product supported education. There's hands-on exercises. We're going to show people how to do fun things like build custom widgets with ChatGPT, or we've got an amazing accessibility panel to kind of make people think about accessibility and learning. And then the second 2 days are really more thought leadership. And that's where we're having, we've got some pretty big names coming. I've seen that Google is going to be there with Accenture. We've got, I think AWS is going to be there, Pinterest. So we've got some amazing names coming, and I can't wait to hear what they are doing with their learning programs.
Wow. I'm really even more honored to get to talk this year. Like all those things, I'm going to have to be on the floor early.
Yeah. And I get to do the keynote on the first day. I'm a little nervous about it, but it's going to be great. It's going to be fun. I'm going to be there with our SVP, Katie Bonilla is going to be there as well. So we're going to have some fun.
You're going to have some fun. Oh, okay. Well, let's start walking out.
Okay.
Anything else that you would like? We could talk, but we'll have to talk more. Actually, when I come to the event, I'll spend some time with you, and we can have a little bit more of an extended conversation. But as we wrap up, what are some, like, you've given some really good gems in this, and I really appreciate the time you've spent with our audience here. If you were speaking to the audience again, this is broader. We're getting out of just being customer ed, and we're being part of, integrated back into the world. Anything else you'd like to say to the audience, or any other ideas as we start wrapping up?
I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it fast, but I'd love to dig a little bit into this idea of value-led product-supported education.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
I think I'd shared with you, it was a few years ago, and I was working in global enablement, and I had a CRO, so a chief revenue officer at the time, who was really intrigued with winning by design. They are a go-to-market sales advisory service, as well as, I feel like I'm giving them a free plug. Hopefully I'll get a commission off this. And then also this idea of value-based selling. And if you had asked me 15 years ago that I would ever be working with sales teams, I would have thought you were crazy. Yeah. And now it is something I'm so passionate about, because what I learned is that people don't buy software to push buttons and set up e-learnings. They buy the software, and it's not just learning platform like Docebo, it's any software that they're buying because they want to achieve a particular outcome. Maybe it's a team that is doing compliance training, and I've been on the backside of that audit. It is not fun. So having a system that can very clearly, be able to demonstrate that you're compliant is just priceless. So anyway, all of that to say that I really started to, watch some of the videos from Winning by Design and their website. And there was this one particular one that resonated with me. And it was about the hero's journey. And it's about how the customer is, again, cheesy Star Wars reference, but the customer is Luke Skywalker and we're Yoda. And so if you're a little bit younger in generation, okay, the customer is Harry Potter and you're Dumbledore, whatever, the geeky analogy of choices that you have. And I can say that because my husband is a huge Star Wars fan and my oldest son is huge into Harry Potter. And so, if we think about it that way and we think about our role as the bridge between what the customer wants to achieve and, again, the business outcomes and the value that they're creating, that is value-led product-supported education. We're there to connect the value.
Yeah.
The product just happens to be the medium through which we are doing.
Amen. That is well put. And I think that's a really good, strong place to wrap up with, because it's important what we do. And that, I like that winning by design approach. I actually got to see some of that when I was at Outreach and they had Jocko come in and we went through some of the courses. And there's other things like the Challenger sale where there's so much education involved in all of this.
Oh yeah.
Right. Inside and out. And it's just fascinating. So, go check that out, audience, Winning by Design. Okay. This is wonderful. This has been a great discussion. I look forward to talking to you more. You're part of a tribe, all of us customer education people have to stick together. So, any place in particular to best reach you if the audience wants to connect and ask you questions? Of course, they're at Docebo Inspire coming up or any of the events. See you there.
Docebo Inspire is great, as well as always feel free to reach out on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there.
Yeah.
I will also share, I'm on the board for the Customer Education Management Association. We've got a private Slack community. You can get a hold of me at any time. So lots of great places to connect.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's wrap up. And as I always say, as at the end of the outro, if you want to learn more, we're all out there. We're on LinkedIn. We also have a podcast website at customer.education. Such a great URL. You can find our show notes, you can find our material, we do transcripts, all that kind of stuff. And we also have another customer community, you know, similar to what you'll find with Sedma as well. And folks from Sedma are in there as well. You can find, connect with, learn from, and share your ideas. Special thanks to Alan Coda for our theme music. And always, as always, if this helps you out, you can help us out by subscribing in Apple Podcast, Overcast, Stitcher, Spotify, all the places, right? And please leave us a review, because this is our job to help connect and help you scale, help you grow, help you learn. Our audience, thanks for joining us. Get out there, educate, experiment, and find your people. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Melissa. Perfect.